Coming up next in this week, computer hardware, 4 terabyte hard drives from Western Digital. The Windows 8 Hardware Festival is arriving. RAM discs are back. It is the 650 Ti a buy or a skip? All this and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 190, recorded October 11th, 2012. Windows 8 is coming.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting, pay for what you use, doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $50 on your first Ting device, visit twitch.ting.com. That's twitch.ting.com.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch's weekly show that brings you the best and most important news in, well, computer hardware. We keep it simple. We throw in some tablets, and we try to answer a few of your viewer questions each and every episode. Joining me as always, oh, by the way, I'm Patrick Norton. Joining me as always is Mr. Ryan Schrouts. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty well today. I'll broach the subject because everybody in the Twit area was watching the Giants and the Reds play, and the Reds lost. Uh-huh. And people on our side were not ecstatic. I may have thrown things across the office. But we've calmed down since then, and we're ready to record a show.
The only game that matters in my world right now is starting in just a few minutes. Oakland A's.
gotcha. Okay, that's fine. If you're not a Giants fan, more power to you. Go Giants A's. Who? I'll root for the A's.
That orange and black group that used to employ Barry Bonds? Expensive, yeah. Overpriced players. I mean, they did win the World Series a couple years ago. I can't be too cruel because Zach, one of our producers, will weep if I talk too much smack about his beloved Giants. But mostly right now, I'm thinking 6:37 p.m., A's versus Tigers. I really, really, really want to see the A's take this one and the next one and the one after that. So I'm East Bay, man. Yep. You know, I can literally, like, if I stand on my roof, I can see where the Oakland A's play. So,
yeah, I can't do that.
I would be kind of frightened if you could. You've been living in where? And you're Skyping in?
Got good eyesight.
This technically is not a show about baseball. This is a show about, yes, ladies and gentlemen, computers. Windows 8 is software, not hardware, but I'm going to mention it real quick because, of course, Windows 8 is coming full-time to everyone in total, utter, awesome release October 26, 2012. Leading up to that, of course, are the new round of RT tablets and a lot of Windows 8 devices, both tablets and notebook laptops, you know, and they're starting to do interesting things. One of the first ones out there, it's going to be interesting to see is the Lenovo Yoga 11, the Windows RT tablet. It's 11-inch RT being the ARM version of Windows. And the full release, or I should say the announcement from Lenovo took place earlier this week. Tim Vary was writing that up at PCPer.com. It is a good-looking tablet. It's just like the Yoga 13, but it's smaller, 15.6 millimeters thick, 2.8 pounds. And basically, it's a notebook, and then as the picture shows, you flip the lid all the way around and it becomes a tablet, especially if you throw your mic at your face. It increases
that picture on the screen is inaccurate. There are not five displays. That's more of a artistic rendition of what it's like to fold back a display.
If you scroll down to the next picture, you get a very accurate rendition of what it looks like in real life.
Gotcha.
So basically, it's a notebook and then it has the big fold over joint. So it kind of folds all the way around like a book, so you can, you know, if you didn't mind break the spine of a book if you folded it this way, but the Yoga works just fine like that. Tegra 3 APU providing powering that, so it should be HD video supporting most of your applications. I got a few minutes hands-on with one. I gotta say, I love the Windows 8 Metro interface on a tablet. It feels right, and I love a tablet that has a built-in keyboard. Although 2.8 pounds is a little heavy for a tablet, it is extremely light for a notebook. And if rumor is correct, you should be looking at like 8 hours. I want to say 8 hours of battery life with that. I could be wrong. Another one.
They did not mention pricing or anything yet, though, right?
I do not think so.
Yeah.
And if I do know it, I cannot mention it because of paperwork I signed. Yeah. Acer, next story up in terms of Windows 8 hardware. There's going to be a whole bunch of announcements around Windows 8 on the hardware side of things, both pointing devices, keyboards, you know, tablets, not so much tablets as touchpads to work with a desktop. What you're looking at right now is the Acer Aconia W510 convertible tablet with Windows 8, also written up by Tim Berry over at PC Per. 10.1-inch tablet will run Microsoft's Windows 8 operating system and any x86 applications, 1.27 pounds, 0.35 inches thick, obviously no giant joint and no keyboard built in, LED right. backlit IPS display running at 1366 by 768, which brings me back to the early days of 720p televisions. 2-megapixel front-facing camera, Gorilla Glass 2 for the screen, 8-megapixel rear camera, both of which are capable of recording 1080p video, micro SD card slot, micro HDMI video output, micro USB 2.0 port. And it's running the Intel Atom Z2760 Clover Trail processor with two cores running 1.5 gigahertz and 2 gigs of RAM. Should we mention, take a brief side step over to mention the, actually, we should probably mention the keyboard dock, which is something you'll probably be seeing a lot.
Yeah. I also want to mention the pricing.
Yeah. The keyboard dock, so the a lot of the tablets that are coming out this fall are going to be tablets. They will have a keyboard that the tablet docks into. You might be saying, I don't care, until you realize a lot of these keyboards are going to have batteries in them, big,
yes,
honking additional batteries that will deliver big, honking additional battery life. So, quote, Acer is claiming 9 hours of battery life on the tablet. With the dock connected, Acer is further claiming its users will get up to 18 glorious hours of battery life. Tell me that doesn't sound cool.
It sounds awesome.
So, pricing.
So and yeah, so this is where I think maybe we'll have an interesting discussion. The W510 with the smallest SSD 32 gigs will start at $499. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about this, you got to remember, this is the full x86 version of Windows 8. This is not Windows RT. So you'll be able to run any application that you run on your laptop today. Dependent on performance, right? Because it's still an Atom processor. It's based on Clover Trail. It's not going to be like some of the Ivy Bridge tablets we've seen announced as well. So $499 for that. And then if you get the version that's 64 gig SSD and the keyboard dock bundle, you're talking $799. Mm-hmm. So where does that fit into your realm of feasibility in terms of tablet pricing?
Well, you know, you know, ideally, in my perfect world, in the fascinating little world inside my head, will all of the right. perfect where exists. You know, the you know, I would like a Core i5 for $700. That's a tablet and a notebook, and gets 18 hours of battery life. That's not going to exist. I don't think $700 is going to be a barrier to entry for a tablet like this. The extremely limited amount of time I've had with like one of the Atom CPUs, it was better than I expected. Would Good. I like a Core i5? Yes.
Right.
You know, for the market they're going at for this, because what's going to be interesting is to seeing with a lot of these tablets, how many of them go to consumers and how many of them go into vertical markets. I think the RT you might find in more vertical markets. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes down. But a lot of the traditional tablet market is, you know, insurance adjusters, hospitals, you know, warehouse facilities, where it's basically like, you know, amalgamated processing, Super 7 software for insert industry here, right? So, I think there's going to be a lot more consumer adoption with Metro because it's such a nice interface on a tablet. But I don't think $700 is going to be a big barrier to entry, certainly not for the early adopter crowd. And watch me get proven wrong in just 2 weeks.
That's, you know, what we'll see, you know, the big push from Intel on Clover Trail. Last thing I'll say on this is that is like, we're going to be price competitive with what you're going to be able to get with the ARM Windows RT based devices. And $499 seems very aggressive in that space. If you kind of look at where the high-end Asus Transformer based tablets are, $499 is kind of right in that range. And those are using Android, not Windows 8 RT or Windows RT. So, you know, I think we'll still stay inside that realm. And if they, even for my personal opinion on this, if if the specs of a WinRT based tablet are almost identical, you know, form factor, battery life, like that stuff, if it's a Clover Trail one, I'm going to choose the x86 one because of the whole compatibility issue. And you still get the same kind of interface. And if application, my understanding as it is today, any application that somebody writes for WinRT, for the App Store on that kind of stuff, will work on Windows 8 on x86 in the Metro interface, I think.
Well,
if that's the case.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see, A, if Atom competes well against the Atom CPUs. Because if you start looking at, like, you know, Alibaba Express, one of the things I found out for one of the shows here over at Revision 3 recently was that you can find, like, $100, decent $100 Android tablets with, like, 7-inch screens. Not great 7-inch screens or 10-inch screens, but functional Android devices running the latest versions of Android. And it's really interesting to look at the kind of global market and how some of the Chinese manufacturers, you can basically, like, hit your checkbox of features, and a few weeks later you'll get a FedEx shipment of tablets to your spec. So, you know, if you want to sit down in Louisville and open up, you know, Ryan's tablet shop, you can make that happen in a matter of weeks. I think it's going to be really interesting to see who's buying the RT tablets. I think there's probably going to be a lot of early adopters who are like, this is great, this is light, this is awesome. Where the delete expletive are the applications for Windows RT?
That's my fear.
I don't
know. Confusion on that side.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really tough. You know, we'll wait to see. I think RT is going to be business, and confused consumers who are going to exchange it for another tablet or just walk away from the entire Windows tablet experience.
Gotcha.
And I think the majority of the sales are going to be like those x86 convertible notebooks. So it'll be interesting because, yep. You know, at this point, I think RT is a big question mark based on the availability of applications. I want to mention for 2 seconds before we go on to our last Windows 8 hardware story, Intel Atom D2500, D2550 processors powering upcoming NAS devices. And basically, another Tim Berry story of PC Per, Intel announced that a couple of its Cedar Trail Atom series processors would be powering, quote, several upcoming network attached storage devices. So 2 to 8 hard drives and offer up a number of features. For example, the storage devices will be able to integrate the McAfee AV SDK to run virus scans in your media files on the NAS box. And thanks to the GPU platforms of storage and the Atom chips, will be able to support up to 2 external displays. The example Intel provided is a security system where the D2500, D2550 can power a computer with lots of attached storage and output up to 4 HD video streams on 2 displays thanks to GPU acceleration. So that's the Thekis N5550 NAS using the Intel Atom processor. So we're looking about $600 without hard drives for some of these boxes. So if you've been looking for bigger NAS boxes and wondering when they're going to arrive, apparently they will be arriving in the next few weeks. So cool. I look forward to that.
The other Windows 8 news, of course, is as we get closer to the release, all these hardware vendors are worried about their drivers. NVIDIA sent out an email very proud about the first Windows 8 WHQL or WQL certified driver, 306.97, good for Windows 7 and Windows 8. They have a host of improvements, 3D application performance changes, that kind of stuff. You know, SLI updates, 3D vision updates, that kind of stuff. Support for the new 650 Ti GPU that we'll talk about in a little bit. But the big deal is that it's the first WQL graphics driver, the first Microsoft certified graphics driver for Windows 8. I think this was pretty much the case with Windows 7. Both AMD and NVIDIA were really, really on the ball in terms of getting drivers ready for launch day, right? They were well in advance, you know, because they know that people are there playing with Windows 8 today, you know, not the release candidate. What was it? The RTM, I guess, builds that are out there. So they wanted to, any flag they can put in the sand, they definitely want to brag about.
Sand flagging. Yeah. At this point, I just installed the final version of Windows 8 on my Core i5 that I use. For most of my writing, and flawless installation, snappy performance. It's only got 4 gigabytes of RAM and it's just smoking along. So I still want to throw in another 8 gigabytes for the sheer unbridled joy of it. But I got to say, I like the performance of Windows 8, especially with an SSD. By the way, it's kind of funny watching the Acer Aspire S
Aspire M5 Ultrabook, V5 laptop, both available October 26th, starting at $750. Sony revamps BIOS for Windows 8, prices Duo 11 and Tap 20. Those stories are up
on
TheVerge.com. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of new hardware at the end of the month.
You think, like, we're going to have, like, the first episode in November that is Twitch Tablet Day or something like that, where we have to go through all these and try to tell you by looking at tables and tables full of specifications, which ones are basically identical.
Just see me rubbing my eyeballs out through the back of my head.
Just think about it for a minute. Every vendor is going to release 5 laptops with touchscreens, 4 tablets.
I think in some of the cases, some of the major vendors, it may only be 2 or 3. Watch now, there'll be 10 like we never heard of that they'll announce at the last minute. I think it's going to be ridiculous, quite frankly. Yep. Yeah, I would expect at least 1, if not 2 tablets from every major PC vendor, at least 1 or 2 touchscreen notebooks. And it was interesting because, you know, I don't like touchscreen desktops unless the actual desktop is the touchscreen. But I don't like typing on a touchscreen because I'm a touch typist, right? But I found, you know, experimenting with notebooks with touchscreens built in, that it was much less irritating. And then you start seeing what they do, like multi finger touch on the trackpad. And that actually is really interesting when you have a trackpad that allows you to deal with all of the edge controls that work so well on a tablet, not so well on a desktop. But when you bring a decent, like, multi-finger touch sensitive trackpad in, it starts to work. I think you and I are going to be pounding our foreheads against tables, because the other thing I'm seeing is, like, so many devices, I smell, and in some cases have seen, but I smell on the wind a lot of complicated hardware joints and screen retraction and just, you know,
release systems.
Some of which have been engineered better than others. You know, I'm starting to think, like, anybody wants to put a magnet to hold a tablet onto a keyboard, probably in the right direction.
Yeah.
A couple of the really complicated joints I've seen, some of them have been amazing. Because, like, sometimes you look at something physical and you just think, like, yeah, so they did this. And sometimes you look at a physical design that has a lot of intricate parts and you're like, wow, this is really clever because I can't figure out a way to break it. Which sounds ridiculous, but laptops, it's not just me. Laptops live a hard life no matter who's carrying them. And the less intricate they are and the more robustly engineered they are, the more successful they're going to be for the company because people aren't going to break them. I think it's going to be really interesting to see everything that comes out. Because also I wouldn't be surprised if there are some new monitors, like, you know, 24, 27 inch touchscreen flat panels. And I wait with bated breath, sir.
Be prepared.
For our laptop tablet festival of November. So in non-Windows 8 news, is the big story, I think, probably the GTX 650 Ti, the affordable 650.
It is affordable. It's actually very affordable. It's a $150 graphics card. This pretty much completes the NVIDIA Kepler GPU lineup for desktop graphics. You've got everything from the 690 at $1,000 down to the GT 640, which I think is $99, maybe $89 now. So GTX 650 is in this. It's in a very crowded space. It's $150. When you get to $200 and below, it becomes a mess because you don't just have the current 600 series products and AMD's current 7000 series products. You have the 6000 series products are still there, sometimes the 5000 series. And then, on NVIDIA, the 500s are still there and sometimes the 400s. And it becomes a real battle there. So our review, I encourage people to go read it because there's a lot of stuff we don't really have time to get into here. But we compare it against the AMD 7770 and the AMD 7850, and those are like the surrounding cards. One is the 7770 is $30 less, and the 7850 is $30 more. And we also compared against the GTX 560, which is Fermi, the last generation NVIDIA GPU, but and it's on its way out the door. That's what I always want to make sure people understand. It's an EOL part. It will eventually stop being sold, and the 650 Ti will be the only one there. But today you can get it for about the same $150, $160 price range. The 650 is, unfortunately, if you look at the performance numbers, a little bit slower than its price
indicates that it should be. It's much closer in performance to the 7770 than it is to the 7850, even though it's mm-hmm. equidistant in dollar amount. Mm-hmm. The specifications are lower. It's a 1 gig frame buffer instead of two. It's a 128-bit memory bus instead of 192 or 156 or 256. It has 768 CUDA cores, all that kind of deal, right? So there are differences in the hardware that this all comes from. So in the benchmarks, it's kind of I'm going to lean towards AMD's 7850 being the better value for your dollar in terms of performance. Where the 650 Ti excels is in power consumption, size, heat, and noise. So all of the non-performance metrics. It uses less power, considerably less power than a lot of the cards. It's quieter, it's smaller, it'll generate less heat. So it all depends on how you weight those things. If you're building a home theater PC that's going to be sitting on a desk or in kind of like a smaller home theater room, then maybe you care about heat, noise, power consumption a little bit more than somebody who is, say, they're a gamer. They want to play games like Dishonored. They want to play XCOM, but they are on a really tight budget. They're looking at $150, $160 video card. I think that person probably cares less about noise and temperature and power and more about get me the most performance I can possibly get for this dollar. And when it comes to that argument, I would lean towards the AMD 7850. So it's still a good card, but this really happens with every kind of generation of release. When you're in the 200, 250 and above range, there's lots of space. So AMD can release a card that fits into a pretty wide gap, and it's got great performance per dollar if that's your dollar mark. And there's no real tough competition on either side that's really close. And NVIDIA can come along behind them and do the same thing and fill in those gaps. And that's kind of what it looks like if you look at a long scale of what's going on. If you go from the 680 to the 7970 gigahertz to the 670 to the 7850 or 7950 2 gig, like these guys are smart. They realize they want to find their little niche. But when you get in the sub $200 market, it all compresses so that a sale one day or a $10 rebate the other day can really swing your decision going in. So, we have to write articles that are static that, have to have some conclusionary statement to it. So we have to go on what it is on release day. So at $150, I think the 650 Ti is probably a little bit too much. If this were to go to $130, best card out there in that price range, right? So look for sales, look for rebates. I'm testing a couple of overclocked cards today, and that's kind of an interesting measure. I actually have one from Zotac that's overclocked on the GPU, overclocked on the memory, and has 2 gigs of frame buffer. So I'm very curious to see how that kind of affects performance versus how much more expensive it's going to be. So,
right.
It's an interesting card, but it's not great.
It's funny. I was looking at the mid range versus low end GPU selections on the PC Per leaderboard. If you're not familiar with it, PCPer.com/leaderboard or PCPer.com/HWLB is sort of the low end of the high end of PC Per's basically hardware selections. You got this much money. Here's the hardware you should buy. And I was thinking, I almost feel like there should be something in between the low end and the mid range system, just because there's so many great cards in between, like $150 and $300.
Yeah, we get a lot of that feedback, and we also get a lot of feedback for total system prices in between that as well. We try to give a little bit of editorializing on, hey, if you are gonna be a heavy gamer and you have $100 extra to spend, you should put it on your GPU, right? And those types of things. So it's tough to kind of have a system that fits everybody. But, the 650 Ti is a good product. It does come with a free copy of Assassin's Creed 3. If you are going to be buying that game anyway, that's a $60 or $50 title. So that's a pretty good deal when you're talking about a $150 video card. That won't be around forever, so we don't really want to take that into our total conclusion about the product. But for today, that's a pretty good deal.
It is a pretty good deal. Getting a little... I was excited. I saw 4 terabyte. I saw hard drive. I saw Western Digital. I was like, yeah. And Al Malventano wrote this up for PCPer.com. The Western Digital RE RAID edition, 4 terabyte SATA. And then the part that made me a little nervous, enterprise drive. So I was thinking awesome new drives. And these actually are pretty awesome. 4 terabyte, 3 terabyte, 2 terabyte versions, SATA 6 gigabit per second connections, SATA connections, which of course you're not going to saturate. And brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, these are fast. Outstanding sequential read and write speeds, file performance approaching 10,000 RPM Velociraptor in some areas, 5-year warranty with 24/7 support online, 1,200,000 hour mean time between failure. That's compared to 1 million for the WD Red series. They are tuned differently than your normal sort of end user consumer drive that might, quote, affect some workloads negatively and not yet available in a GP series. And they start at $229 for a 2 terabyte drive and whip right up to $459 for a 4 terabyte version. So this is not an inexpensive drive. Alan's summary is pretty clear. Western Digital has released a 4 terabyte disk drive in the form of its new RE series. RE drives have always carried a faster track geometry than their consumer units, and the same case applies here. A heavier head pack resulted in a slightly higher seek times, but our sample was able to keep random access performance in check and turn in some of the best file copy performance numbers we've seen from a spinning disk to date. And I think if you're looking at 4 terabytes, think about buying it. You probably don't want to buy these drives unless you really have a lot of money to burn. Alan says, here's hoping we see the 4 terabyte capacity point trickle down to the red and green lines soon. These are enterprise drives with enterprise support and enterprise prices. Because I could buy, like, for one of these, I could buy 6 terabytes of greens at the very least.
Yeah, that's perhaps that's, more, depending on the shop. That's the main issue with these drives is the expense. What we hope to see is a little bit down the line, green versions of these. Maybe even the reds. I'd like to see the reds in stock again, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we've got a lot of questions like, you know, should I buy a red drive for my home theater PC? And A, no, and B, you can't find them for sale anyway, so don't sweat it.
Find them.
Yeah, I mean, look, red drives, they're the new sort of consumer NAS drives. If you're loading up a NAS, you've got something crazy like I do where you've got 12 terabytes of drives in one box, go for the reds. They're delightful. For most end user scenarios, green drives will do just fine. And if you've been looking for one of Samsung's 830s, buy it quickly. I don't think they're going away like this week, but it's amazing. Like there's a link in Jeremy's article up in PC Per. 830 Samsung 830 256 gigabyte drives, SSD solid state drives for $200, 128 gigabyte models, $90. That is sick. And the reason those prices are so ridiculously, unbelievably, awesomely low is because the 840 and 840 Pro are going to be replacing the 830. So if you've been waiting to buy an SSD, it might be a good time to pick one up. The 830 performance is awesome. If you're still using a traditional spinning, rotating media Winchester hard drive, it will change. It is the most amazing performance job. Unless you if you've had the same CPU for 4 years and you buy a new Core i5 processor, that's going to knock you back in your seat. You know, if you've got a 2-year-old computer and you want to have an amazing upgrade experience, go from a rotating hard drive, a traditional hard drive, to an SSD. And the 830 is a great hard drive. And $200 for a 256 gigabyte hard drive is awesome. And the 128 gigabyte model, if you want an inexpensive SSD for your gaming box or your desktop or your notebook.
We actually saw a deal this morning. I don't know if it's still going on. I don't remember what the URL was. It was an older SSD. It was a SATA 2, not a SATA 3 SSD. It was a Vertex something. It was a Bigfoot drive. Is that right? A Bigfoot controller. So it was decent. It was a 120 gig drive for $49.99. It was 40 cents per gig. It was the lowest I've ever seen a not used, non-refurbished SSD. So
refurbished and drive always makes me nervous. I'm pretty good.
This one was not refurbished. This one was new. But no, it was the lowest non-refurbished purposes. Price, so. Yeah.
That's pretty cheap, dude.
I remember buying refurbished Samsung SSDs. Were they Samsung? Micron. Micron SSDs for $1 a gig and thinking, I just stole these SSDs. And now stealing is 40 cents per gig. So
The 128 gigabyte SATA drives from the Samsung 830, the deal on Newegg, they are out. Just as I was about to hit purchase. So 256 gigabytes, Samsung's still in stock. For a couple more minutes.
Now, you put a comment on our next story about Welcome Back to 1997. What is this? Is that a knock on the technology, the idea of a RAM disk?
It's just so... Okay. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, before the aughts started, RAM disks were a really big deal. And my personal favorite RAM disks were the ones that were volatile memory. You'd load a bunch of DIMMs into a PCI, not PCI Express, PCI card, and you would have this super fast chunk of memory. Of course, going even farther back, RAM disks like, you know, were ways to speed up performance and speed up performance and battery life in a big way. I remember on my Macintosh Duo 280, like 20 years ago almost, you would create a RAM disk and it would give you this awesome performance boost over the insanely slow hard drives back then. And then RAM drives kind of had another big surge in the consumer world when people were creating these PCIs, a small group of people were creating PCI cards where you would load them full of relatively inexpensive memory. And you would create like an amazing 1 gigabyte RAM disk, and it was incredibly fast. Of course, it disappeared when you shut your computer off because it was volatile memory. And then they came up with the idea of having a PCI card with an external power supply.
The battery? Yeah.
So, yeah, no, an actual physical like wall wart you would plug into a PCI card.
Nice.
So the memory would stay. I don't remember actually ever seeing anything other than the press release for that one. And then, of course, now memory is ridiculously cheap, and motherboards that support ridiculous numbers of gigabytes, you know, just ridiculous amounts of memory are inexpensive. And so AMD has launched the Radeon RAM disk. It's a Radeon-branded memory product today called the Radeon RAM disk, says Tim Very. Despite the rather unoriginal name, it is a piece of software that will allow you to use a portion of your system RAM as a hard drive-like storage device where you can install programs. AMD has partnered with DataRAM to evolve this. It's designed to be used with AMD's own DataRAM branded DDR3 modules, so other manufacturers' RAM will work as well. And basically, you know, it's really interesting. Like Windows 7, Windows 8 will cache your most frequently used data and applications in the main system memory that's not currently being used by applications as part of a performance boost. It's pretty clever. So if you have 12 gigabytes of RAM or 24 gigabytes of RAM or some ridiculous amount of RAM, you don't use it all the time, Windows will automatically start stuffing information in there, you know, anticipating it'll need it in the near future. With the Radeon RAM disk, you can choose what information gets stored on your RAM disk. Quote, RAM disk, the Radeon RAM disk can reach speeds as high as 25,600 megabytes per second with DDR3 1600 RAM and up to 1,700% faster game loading times than a traditional mechanical hard drive. All you need is 4 gigabytes of system RAM. Windows operating system from Vista and above are supported. The full version costs $19, but there's a freeware version of the Radeon RAM disk that can create disks up to 6 gigabytes with AMD-branded RAM or 4 gigabytes of RAM from any other manufacturer. So that's pretty cool, the idea that you might be able to, okay, you're not going to be able to install games, but some other stuff you can load in there.
You can do that. You can install games.
In 4 gigabytes?
Not inside 4 or 6 gigs, probably. Not a game where it's going to matter. Version,
you can do 64 gigabytes.
Right.
So,
we were talking about it last night. I think it's a great idea. Hopefully you have an SSD to go along with it. So like if you're writing 10 or 15 gigs of data back and forth every time you reboot, want that to be fast. I don't reboot my machine very often. So for me, that's not a huge deal, I guess. But I'd be curious to try it out. I mean, 16 gig and 32 gig memory kits are so cheap.
Yeah.
It's fun to just be able to experiment with these types of things. And even if you get the free version only and you can get 4 or 6 gigs, you can try to use it as a scratch disk. You can try to use it for, any of that kind of random stuff just to see what the speed is like.
Yeah. My favorite thing in the benchmark charts is the top benchmark chart in there, the HD2 2.55 read transfer rates, where the Radeon RAM disk 4 gigabytes was running like 3,700 to 4,000 megabytes compared to like 156 or 200 megabytes for an Intel X25 or a Samsung SpinPoint. So
Yeah, I mean, when you see the graphs, I mean, it's staggering, right? It's not a perfect technology. It is volatile. You have to worry about reboots and if your system crashes, what happens and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you obviously can't install your operating system to it because you have to have the application running to do anything. But it's interesting.
Well, you know, if you're running on a virtual machine, though, but, well, I guess a virtual machine is already running inside of system memory. In any case, it's free. It's at RadeonRamDisk.com. Go check it out if you want to get your nerd on. Dude, the Asus PHZ77B Deluxe LGA 1155 ATX motherboard has a long name. How does it stack up against the motherboards you've seen this year?
Steve did this review for us. It's a great board. Asus Z77 lineup has been pretty impressive since the Ivy Bridge release, and actually a little bit before that, I guess. It does support SLI and Crossfire. You can do three-way. It has Wi-Fi support, Bluetooth support. It's got six USB 3.0 connections on the back, which is good, plus the header on the motherboard. So you have a total of eight USB 3.0 ports on there, dual gigabit Ethernet, and then the whole allotment of normal kind of hardware features. Asus is more proud of their software features, their fan control software, their overclocking software, a lot of this type of tweaking and capability. USB 3.0 boost, they have the capability to change the hardware communication mode of USB 3 to run a little bit more efficiently, get a little bit more performance out of it ahead of the official rollout of UASP-based devices, I think maybe with the Windows 8 release. It did well in benchmarks, but as with most motherboards, benchmarks are benchmarks. They're all going to kind of be the same as long as you're using same memory timings and same processor settings and that kind of stuff. So it really comes down to the experience and the support and all that kind of stuff, which Asus does extremely well, right? They've come here and demoed a lot of their stuff on our live video streams, trying to show off, look, motherboards are more than just this piece of PCB that you set inside your computer and plug everything else into. Here's all the other stuff you can do with it. You know, wireless desktop access, wireless file access from your phone using Asus routers and other included software and that kind of deal. They do a good job of kind of bundling a bunch of this stuff together. This particular board is, I think it's a little bit on the expensive side, $279 at Newegg as of the time it was published. It's not quite the highest end Z77 board from Asus, but it's up there. You've got the premium board above that has Thunderbolt and that kind of stuff. But you can get a lot of the same feature set on other Asus Z77 boards for, you know, down to as low as, I think, $150. And you can really easily see what is there and what is missing. Like, I think some of the boards won't have eSATA and that kind of stuff. So take a look at this review, and it'll give you a little bit of an overview, of what the other options are out there, too.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We should probably take a moment to remind you that Twitch, TWICH at twit.tv is the email address. And if you're new to the podcast, welcome. If you want to learn, pretty much find all the podcasts, you can has all of them. Go to http://twit.tv/twitch. I suppose I should say, if I'm going to actually say http://, in any case, twit.tv/twitch, TWICH. I'm going farther back, man. Pretty soon I'm going to be talking about, let's not get into CPM. We'll all start crying at that. Twitch at twit.tv is the email address. If you want to ask us a question, we've got some interesting questions coming from Michael and Mark and Andrew coming up after the break. But let's take a quick moment to thank our new sponsor, Ting, TING.com. They want to save you money on your cell phone bill in a very big way, right?
Yeah, this is the first time this new sponsor has been with us on the show. And I had to do research on it, like as we do here on the show. We don't really just allow anybody to advertise on the Twit Network. And I came away really, really impressed. Ting is they call themselves a no BS mobile service. That's their wording, not even mine, right? So this is going to be pretty up. They're upfront about it. It is a MVNO, which is mobile virtual network operator.
Basically, they resell. Yeah, they use the Sprint network. They sell Sprint data. They sell Sprint phone service. They just do it in a rather different way than what most of us are used to.
they buy it in bulk. I guess, and then share those, you know, those kind of resources with us. So how is Ting different? There's no contracts. There's no ETFs. You don't have to worry about, you know, $400 to leave if you want to leave for whatever reason it is. Truly and completely contract-free, no early termination fees, no bundling or ride-along services. You can choose from extra small to extra, extra large service levels for voice minutes, text messages, megabytes per data, all billed separately. So you can, you know, pick, I don't want to use any text messages because I use Google Voice, but I need a lot of data because I do a lot of mobile browsing for other things. So it's really cool to be able to break things up that way. There's no overage charges or penalties. If you use more than you thought you would, you just pay for what you used. And it's really, really impressively low rates. If you use minutes beyond your minutes, you're paying 2 cents. If you're using text messages, they're a quarter of a cent. And if you're using extra megabytes, they're 2.25 cents. Go ahead and compare those overage rates to your current carrier. I don't know. Maybe your text messages are 25 cents or 35 cents. Your extra minutes are not going to be 2 pennies either. I can be pretty sure of that. So that's great as well. There are credits on unused service. If you use less than you thought, Ting drops you down to the level you hit and credits the difference on your next bill. No add-on charges, no mysterious line items on your bill, unlimited devices on one plan. You can have as many devices as you want on one plan with shared pool of minutes, messages, and megabytes. And then each device, you just add $6, right? So if you and your wife and your two kids want to get on it, you can do that. And you don't have to worry about separate plans for each person. This I really like, a powerful online account control panel. So you can adjust your bills pretty much on the fly. You don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. Customer service is going to be great here. No hold customer support, they call it. Call us at 1-855-TING-FTW. That's pretty awesome. It kind of puts you in perspective of what kind of company you're dealing with. Anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern, and a real person will pick up the phone. Real person. That's crazy. They have great online support as well. So how does it work exactly? First, you purchase your mobile device from Ting, which you will receive in 2 to 5 business days. Then you activate your device with Ting and have the option to select a new phone number or port an existing one. Finally, you select the monthly minutes, messages, and megabytes plans that you think represent your usage, and Ting will bill you at the beginning of your payment period, but you will be charged or credited in the following pay period based on what you actually used. So they're not trying to con you into picking a bigger plan that you will not actually take advantage of. This is really cool. We were talking about it before the show started. I've looked at lots of different configurations on how many minutes I actually use. I don't use text messaging because I do use Google Voice for text messaging. So I can take a considerable amount off of my plan with that way because I'm using data instead of text. It's a really compelling offer. What you need to do, how do you take advantage of this? How do you find out about it? We want you to visit Ting today at twitch.ting.com. That's twitch.ting.com. Save money and better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. Check out their savings calculator so you can put in what you currently use, what you currently pay, and they'll tell you how much you would save by switching over to their service. Twitch viewers also save $50 on your first Ting device when you sign up. So that's a pretty good deal. And all you have to do to get that special deal is go to twitch.ting.com and start saving today. I got to tell you, it's pretty impressive to see. I don't want to give them too much extra love for their first ad. That way they keep coming back, right? Right. But that's pretty cool stuff.
It's interesting looking at the sort of, you know, what you pay now versus what you potentially pay at Ting. The calculator is it's a pretty compelling. You know, you got
just like the idea of a service provider that's not trying to take advantage of you, right? Like, oh, you didn't use that many minutes? That's fine. We'll credit you. Like, oh, what a thought. What an idea.
And if you want to choose the smallest possible option, so you're committed to the smallest possible monthly payment, they're not going to zap you with overage charges. You basically pay what you would pay if you had normally scheduled a larger amount of data. It's just, it's very cool. And what's that URL again, Ryan?
Twitch.ting.com.
So I want to make sure everybody's got it.
Yep.
Twitch.ting.com. We want to thank Ting for sponsoring the podcast. That's indeed. We like that. We appreciate that. We had a question from Michael. I'm going to throw this one directly at you because you are the king of benchmarks on this podcast. He says, I'm looking for a software package to benchmark my systems. Do you have any recommendations for Apple's and Orange's computers to get an idea of the overall performance between two machines? What do you think of software packages like Passmark Performance Test?
So this is so there's all kinds of debates you could get into about this. Yes. If you are a just an end user and you're kind of, you know, maybe you're buying a new system, you're upgrading your system, and you want to be able to kind of put a metric to the performance benefits you're going to get, other than maybe what you just see or feel, then you can use applications like PCMark. They have free versions of PCMark that you can run. The Passmark Performance Test is fine. You know, I think when we do benchmarking, we usually have very specific goals in mind. What aspect of this particular processor or graphics card are we trying to test? When we look at doing graphics cards, we're using real world games for the most part, right? We do 3D Mark and we do Unigen just so we have some stable metrics to look at, but we're doing real world gaming experiences and how does this affect what you'll actually do. With the CPU, it's a little bit harder because a lot of the CPU is your normal just kind of computing environment. What does it feel like? That's harder to kind of put a number to. You know, when you get into the high end, you can get into the SysMarks and that kind of stuff, but those are much more complicated pieces of software. They're not free. I wouldn't recommend it to any kind of just normal consumer looking to benchmark. You know, Ada 64 has some benchmark capability. SciSoft Sandra has benchmark capability. You can test your CPU. They have free versions of both of those software pieces of software, so you can check those out. And then again, like FutureMark has 3D Mark and PC Mark benchmarks as well. And they have free and low-cost versions of that. And it's useful for compare your systems to your friends, compare your current systems to your other systems. They can give you ideas of where maybe some bottlenecks are and that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah. It's I got to say, you know, either benchmark what you're interested in testing or use a synthetic benchmark and you just trust the results either way.
there's a lot of people, look for benchmarks to kind of validate their
system,
what they already think. And that's okay. There's no problem with that.
Yeah. But you know, if you look at a PC Per article where they're reviewing something, there are a lot of benchmarks because they're trying to give you a complete picture. PC Per, obviously, you know, there's media encoding, there's gaming, but truthfully, you know, a well-balanced system is going to be a well-balanced system. And if you're interested in like a really obscure CAD/CAM application, then you should figure out how to benchmark it for that really obscure CAD/CAM application. At least figure out what that CAD/CAM application gets the best improvement from and then look for benchmarks that test those things.
And we still do this every day because like even today we were building systems for a specific purpose. We were trying to build a computer that could do about encode 5 streams out to 5 different like online services at the same time. And
it's a big,
I wasn't sure exactly what it would be. And there's no benchmark specifically to do that. So we built a system, tried to do it and go, well, that didn't work. We're pegged at 100%. Let's build another system and see how that does. We have the benefit to have access to a bunch of hardware to kind of sitting around us to kind of troubleshoot and go back and forth. So benchmarking is not an exact science and it's not going to, as you pointed out, really, get to everybody's specific use case.
Right. I mean, in an ideal world, we would all be in Ryan's office and we would have like several hundred terabytes of system memory and, you know, 16 gigabyte sticks to play with. And you laugh, right? But the ideal situation is like, gosh, I wonder what will happen if I run this with 32 gigabytes of RAM or if I run it with 64 gigabytes of RAM. And what's the difference between running it in like, you know, 2 16 gigabyte sticks versus, you know, 4 8 gigabyte sticks. And, you know, that's like the real fun in benchmarking is when you have enough time and you have all the resources you need to really try all of the you know, sort of all of the possible
gotta have enough time, you
know, and enough hardware, because you know it'd be nice if we all had 64 gigabytes of RAM and a couple of SSDs lying around it to run all, so we can't
have
all the testing options. Mark's got an email about saving space in your primary drive. He says, hi, guys. On the subject of Chad's email last week, there is something I and many sysadmins do to save space on small drives. You can, with the awesome power of software, set your user account profile to another disk. You do this from your user manager. I have tons of stuff on my desktop and in my documents folders, and these are all now in my large spinning disk, leaving my games on my SSD. Another thing you can do is create a symbolic link to redirect individual folders to other disks. The command prompt syntax is capital M, capital K, capital L, lowercase INK, space slash H, name in brackets, target path in brackets. In my experience, this has worked perfectly with the exception of Skyrim, which has completely ignored both settings. Thanks for the great show and all the advice given in the past, Mark. Thank you, Mark, for the heads up. Interesting.
Yeah, it's yeah, that's, I mean, those, I've heard some things where maybe it doesn't work 100%, and I think it's still a beta feature in Steam as well to do that. So kind of like their TV-based interface. But that's what we want, is a perfection of that idea to just really easily move. It was funny. We were playing Unreal Tournament 2004 again last night, an old game. And Jeremy, who works for us, was very surprised that he could just take the Unreal Tournament folder, move it to another hard drive, double-click the executable, and start the game. There was no installation. There was no, oh, your DLLs are in the wrong folder or anything like that, right? It just starts. And I would like to get back to that era of portability. I don't think we ever will, but I would love it.
You could dream, though.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful dream. One last one before we go. Andrew has some thoughts on Steam for a small SSD. He says, I saw your episode regarding Steam on a solid state drive. Wanted to offer up a solution that I've been using for several months now called Steam Mover. I probably got this from lifehacker.com. If you're not familiar with lifehacker.com, it is an epic website with everything from how to remove stains from your clothing to the, you know, it's just, it's a lot of tech, a lot of really good advice up there. If you haven't seen it, lifehacker.com, go there. Gina Trapani founded it. It is an epic website. Trainier.com/software/Steam Mover. That's TRAYNIER.com/software/Steam Mover. Basically creates a symbolic link or whatever the correct Windows name is between the Steam Games folder and a folder of your choosing. This has the benefit of leaving your Steam folder intact while moving specific games that benefit from an SSD to that faster drive. At the time I was investigating this solution, you could only move your entire Steam library as a whole. Not sure if that's still the case. This allows me to keep a monster Steam library while only moving, say, FPS games to my very size-constrained SSD, leaving the rest of my non-Twitch games on the rotating media. The kicker, though, is that because of the symlinks, Steam remains happy and all updates are applied without issue. Also, if you're paranoid about running the scripts on your rig, the app allows you to run the commands yourself. Phew, long-winded, but I do find this little app to be awesome. I got to say, Andrew, awesome, awesome tip on Steam Mover. And by the way, I got to say, Burke is in the studio. Is Chad still building the Hackintosh we were talking about last week? Can we get a shot of the red-haired wonder himself, arms deep in Hackintosh joy? Any chance on that? Yes! That is Hackintosh joy on that face.
Look at the bags and the pieces of stuff just in there. Oh, look, it's doing something. It's very, oh, he's flashing the BIOS, it looks like. Don't turn it off now. Don't kick the power plug. Don't do that. You know, on that Steam Mover, what I want to point out is it's called Steam Mover, but if you look at the first line, he says, I see no reason why it wouldn't work for other apps too. It's just using standard Windows commands.
Interesting.
So this could be useful for... we're looking at each other because this can be useful for a lot of things that we're doing to be able to create these kind of symbolic links across your even like high-speed networks or Thunderbolt devices and all that kind of stuff too. So interesting little app. We will have to play around with it and see what it does and does not break.
Oh man!
The yeah, first con is no warranty whatsoever.
And I don't think it's been updated since, well, no, September 2nd of September 2010. So let's just assume it works. It works well, and they haven't had to change anything.
That's perfect. Yeah, I like that thought.
I like that thought. Ladies and gentlemen, that is about it for this episode of Twitch. Mr. Shrouts, might I ask what excitement is coming up on PCPro.com?
I don't. We've got the 650 Ti articles we're going to go over. I'm just, it's like, there's like 100 things going on. I'm not exactly sure where we're at there. We have a couple. I know Alan has one or two more SSDs to look at. And we have, oh, the new Drobos with the 2.5-inch caching SSD in them. Yeah, he's in the middle of testing one of those right now, too.
I'm going to call up and whine. They told us they were going to bring one up when they had them available. But you got one first, did you?
Maybe we didn't get one. Maybe I'm lying to you.
You're not lying to me. I don't think you're lying at all.
No. No, I'm not. This.
I'm actually out on Monday, so Veronica Belmont and Robert Heron will be holding down the Fort, so I expect some good HD content from the HDTV Maven himself. Are we talking about, we're going to get our Linux on. Since it's going to be like a week out from the Windows 8 Festival, we're going to be talking about DistroWatch next week and taking a close look at what's going on with the Windows hardware that's arriving. And rumor has it, we are going to be revisiting the legendary fastest, least painful way to rip Blu-rays onto your hard drive for the sheer unbridled joy of just ripping hard drives. We also talked about, if you've been thinking about it, upgrading to an SSD and you've been nervous about it, we actually did a whole segment on that on yesterday's episode of Techzilla. It basically walks you through how to deal with moving to an SSD without any pain or suffering, even if you don't want to upgrade your operating system. Although we recommend a fresh install. We tell you how to do a fresh install on your SSD to make everything work all hunky and dory. Nice. That was kind of fun. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to be about it for this episode of Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware. As we mentioned earlier, Twitch, T-W-I-C-H at twit.tv is the email address. And if you want to subscribe, if you're not familiar with the podcast, you stumbled across us and you want to know how to find us in the future, twit.tv/Twitch, I believe, is the URL, unless I've lost my mind, which is entirely possible. Yes, twit.tv/Twitch. And I'm Patrick Dorn.
I'm Ryan Schrock.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.